Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. The coal strike drags on and on. It's now in its 80th day, and efforts to end it through collective bargaining are at a standstill. The operators say they're ready to resume talks with the United Mine Workers Union, but they add that in view of the union's bargaining position, further negotiations hardly seem fruitful. With both sides evidently frozen in place, Labor Secretary Ray Marshall and White House officials are in conference this morning to determine a future course of action, as they put it. Susan Spencer reports the way the situation looks at the moment.
When the history of this strike is written, yesterday may go down as the day of the rejected offer. First, the union turned thumbs down on an industry proposal to go voluntarily to binding arbitration. The union said that wasn't fair. Then the companies rejected a union offer to agree to any contract, patterned after one reached earlier this week with a small Midwestern coal company. They said that wasn't fair, since they said a nationwide contract should not be based on regional issues. It was clear by 10 o'clock that further negotiations at that point were fruitless, and face-to-face talks were canceled. Susan Spencer, CBS News, Washington.
The Tennessee Valley Authority, the nation's largest utility and among those hurting the most for coal, is down to a 24-day supply and is buying 200,000 tons of it from the Kerr-McGee Corporation. The coal is being supplied from Kerr-McGee oil coal fields in Wyoming, not affected by the strike. A company spokesman declines to say how much of this arrangement because of what he calls the very real fear of violence. The Senate today opens its doors again to press and public as debate goes forward on the Panama Canal treaties. Neil Strausser reports.
The public debate resumes today with further voting on amendments possible, but nothing scheduled. In the one vote so far, Democratic leader Robert Byrd has learned that, on procedural matters at least, the charges of a Torrijos drug connection, aired in the day and a half of closed sessions, appear to have cost him no support.
Mr. Randolph. Mr. Randolph, aye.
And the national radio audience, hearing for the first time, learned that most Senate votes are cast in a last-minute rush and not in alphabetical order.
Mr. Magnuson. Mr. Magnuson, aye.
When the votes were counted, 67 senators, the majority needed to ratify the treaties, had voted with Byrd to set aside a motion to change the order of consideration of the treaties. Byrd feels the treaty chances could be hurt if protections of U.S. rights are not considered first. On that question, he won even the votes of six of the seven senators listed as uncommitted by CBS News. But as Republican Edward Brooke promptly made plain, several of the uncommitted aren't ready yet to vote yes on the treaties until they know more about the cost to the U.S. of the canal turnover. That may be the next big issue after the drug charges. Neil Strausser, CBS News, Washington.
The Senate Banking Committee has decided to hold another public hearing next week on the nomination of G. William Miller to be chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. It plans to take a further look at a $2.9 million payment made to an Iranian company by Bell Helicopter, a subsidiary of Textron Incorporated, which Miller heads. The committee wants to determine whether it was a legitimate business expense or an improper payoff. Miller will be back in the witness chair. With the consent of the British Home Office, London's police commissioner has taken an extraordinary action, imposing a two-month ban on all outdoor political demonstrations and marches throughout the city. The ban goes into effect tomorrow, and Bob Dyke reports the reasons for it.
The ban is being imposed to avert public violence between two groups at opposite extremes of Britain's political spectrum, members and followers of the far right-wing National Front and adherents of the far left-wing Socialist Workers' Party. Past showdowns between the two organizations have led to major civil disturbances here, and the police ban is aimed at preventing future outbreaks. The Front and Socialist Workers are forbidden by the ban from holding demonstrations this weekend in northeast London, where a parliamentary by-election is scheduled. But spokesmen for both groups say they'll get around the law somehow. The ban's being imposed under Britain's 1936 Public Order Act and applies only to political demonstrations here and not to religious or ceremonial processions, Easter parades, or marches organized by the Scouts or the Salvation Army. Bob Dyke for CBS News, London.
Foreign ministers of the Organization of African Unity are still in conference today in Tripoli, Libya, and Jerry Bowen tells us what they're doing.
The foreign ministers are continuing to plow through an agenda which is heavy with fiscal matters and light on political substance. Only the last three items may stir any world interest, especially the proposal by Libya that the OAU draft a strong resolution on occupied Arab territory and the plight of the Palestinians. There has been no official mention of the Horn of Africa situation, despite the presence of both the Ethiopian and Somali delegations. Nations, and a plea prior to the start of the conference from the Somalis that they be given aid. Officially, though, the OAU is maintaining a hands-off posture, believing that Somalia brought the trouble on itself and will have to live with the outcome, whatever it may be. Jerry Bowen, CBS News, Tripoli.
The Carter administration has done something of an about-face on Prime Minister Ian Smith's plan for transfer of power to the black majority in Rhodesia. Smith has been discussing it with moderate black leaders, and they have apparently made good progress. Originally, the State Department denounced Smith's plan, then it took a neutral position. Yesterday, the department called it, quote, a significant step in the right direction. Tuesday afternoon, when a gunman commandeered his car with Herman and his two sons inside at a shopping center in Richmond, Indiana. The ordeal ended last night across the state line in Ohio. Chris Kelly in Springfield reports the sudden conclusion.
Unlike the beginning, the ending came peacefully and somewhat unexpectedly. For nearly 30 hours, Robert Herman was held hostage in two cars, half the time with his two sons, with a gun pointed at him. Late last night, long after Herman's boys had been released, two officers were inside the car trying to convince the gunman to give up. Lieutenant Roger Evans said there was another demand, but it worked against the gunman this time.
I gave him a pack of cigarettes, and he opened the pack and went to light it, and he lit the cigarette with matches, so he had to use both hands. And through fatigue or relaxation, he laid the gun down, and at that time we apprehended him.
It was the hostage Herman who grabbed the gun, a surprise move to the officers, who said it worked even better than their own plans to free him. Later, Herman said he felt all right, was not mistreated by the gunman, Byron Ball, who now is in federal custody in Dayton. Authorities say Ball, an escaped prisoner, is wanted for five bank robberies in Ohio and New Jersey. Chris Kelly, CBS News, Springfield, Ohio.
Federal appeals judge William Webster is being sworn in today in Washington as director of the FBI, succeeding Clarence Kelly. President Carter and Vice President Mondale plan to attend the ceremony at FBI headquarters, and Chief Justice Warren Burger will administer the oath. One of the nation's most valuable historical institutions, the Aerospace Museum in San Diego, was laid waste last night by fire. Greg Tantum of station KSDO tells us about it.
The Aerospace Museum was totally destroyed, along with priceless relics of aviation and space exploration. Among them, an exact replica of Lindbergh's Spirit of St. Louis, which was used in a movie of the aviator's life. Also lost in the flames, a World War II Japanese Zero fighter plane, as well as an actual Mercury space capsule and copies of Apollo and Gemini capsules. San Diego City Councilman Jess Harrell says the loss will be heavy.
A building like this, you're talking about $10, $15 million, even more, if you look at the square footage here, plus the fact you're talking about some very special kind of construction. And I don't think that you can place a value on what was inside of it.
The San Diego fire chief says two children were seen near the museum only minutes before it erupted into flames, leading him to believe that arson may be the cause. Greg Tatum for CBS News, San Diego.
Some of the planes on display there were on loan from other museums around the country. Assistant Secretary of State Alfred Atherton is meeting today in Cairo with Egyptian Foreign Minister Mohammed Kamel, hoping to get the Egyptian-Israeli peace talks going again. The Egyptian government, still displaying outrage over the Cypriot National Guard attack on its commandos at Larnaca Airport in Cyprus, yesterday broke diplomatic relations with the Cypriot government, and Doug Sager reports from Cairo that Egyptians are convinced that the commandos who lost their lives were victims of a conspiracy. The government-controlled Egyptian press is floating several theories, but Sager tells us that the evidence is hardly of a kind that would stand up in a court of law. The Middle East news agency this morning says that President Carter has sent Egyptian President Sadat a message expressing support for Sadat's decision to send the commando force to Larnaca. The Middle East news agency says the message also expresses sympathy over the deaths of 15 commandos who it says died for a noble cause.